Accession number 24198, Rule 3.
This is the second reel of a taped interview with Jim Boyd in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 30th of the 9th, 2002, at the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Jim, you're talking about some of your experiences throwing the food out of the portholes on your way. You mentioned you were to stop in Ceylon.
Ceylon.
What was it like to approach Ceylon and the arrival there?
Saw very little of it, actually. We weren't there that long. We were not allowed off the boat. And I think they must have called in for fuel or food stocks or something. But can't tell you much.
What was the general sort of sense of seeing other parts of the world? I mean, obviously, you were now beginning to see other parts of the world. What was it feeling like?
Yeah, well, as far as Ceylon went, we didn't, as I say, we didn't see much of it until we got to, I'm pretty certain, at Port Tewfik. But travelling up the Red Sea, I thought that was the hottest place on Earth. It was very hot in the going up the Gulf. And even the air conditioning on the Queen Mary couldn't do much about it. But we were glad to get to the end of the Gulf up to Port Tewfik.
What was the feeling on board ship? You mentioned your location. What was the feeling on board ship, the average day that was spent?
Oh, pretty jovial. We all got on well together. A ship full of men, considering that we're from different parts of Australia, Victoria, New South Wales and then places. But, we had boxing competitions and different games, sports to play, and more or less a jovial atmosphere, no arguments.
What was the general feeling towards officers and people in higher rank from the average soldier below decks?
They didn't worry as much. They they had their jobs to do, had their guard duty, weren't allowed to smoke on deck or anything. You had to be pure darkness on the boat all night time. Cigarettes, you could have a smoke downstairs. But, otherwise, nothing much happened on the boat itself.
You're mentioning that you had certain chores to do. You mentioned running around on board deck. What was happening in those times when you weren't having to do PT or when you weren't being fed, for instance? How did you pass the time?
Just reading books, talking about different things if they were West Australians. Any conversation, just to pass the time of day, kind of thing.
People talk of things like you mentioned boxing, two up.
No, I didn't see any two up. Not that I worried about gambling much.
The sort of
soldier's pastimes of playing cards, of filling in the time. Was there discussion about where you were going?
No. There wasn't much talk on what might happen. It's just a case of when we get there, we'll see what happens. We had no prior news of what we might see or might not see, kind of thing. So it was just left to us to think what might be like when we got there.
Was anyone, so no one was giving you briefings in relation to where you were going, what was expected of you once you got there?
No.
How did the sort of general uncertainty of the situation, how do you think that was affecting the morale, possibly, of the troops on board ship?
Well, I didn't notice any difference with them. Just a case of we were prepared to see what happened when we got there, kind of thing.
We mentioned coming up the Red Sea. What was the feeling like presumably seeing the foreign shore? What was the feeling like seeing a new part of the world?
Well, with the shimmering heat, the only coastline we saw, we thought, well, this is a godforsaken, dry, bloody place. Worrying about getting a drink of water, it might be a trouble.
Did you ever question what it was about this place that was of interest?
No.
Why it needed to be defended, this godforsaken place?
Well, I suppose we wondered, but we thought, oh, well, they must know what they're doing. We're going into the place, the area, must be worth something to them, to somebody.
As you came close to your destination, to what degree did the excitement on board ship increase, do you think?
Well, it increased that by that time we were more or less glad to be getting off the boat and getting our feet on shore and seeing different scenes that might be there. The pyramids and things like that, I suppose, went through our minds that we might one day see them. But otherwise, we're just waiting for the end of the voyage.
So when the end of the voyage came, what were your impressions of the place that you stopped at?
Well, we found that the people all looked different to us, wogs as you call them. We thought, oh, we'll have to get used to seeing wogs morning, night and day. By that time the weather had cooled a bit when we got in onto shore.
What was the situation like on your disembarkation? Do you recall what you were to do?
No, just different platoons as they came off. You just formed up, just stuck to your platoon, and they put you in position.
Of the actual place, what were your impressions of the place, do you think? bank buildings?
Oh, yes. Mostly all, everything white. White walls, white houses, white shops. Otherwise, just living places.
How do you think the locals saw your arrival? Did they greet you in any manner?
No, they didn't say it, but seemed as though they were used to seeing British troops near them or around them or something. But, no one seemed to worry us.
So you were taken to your first camp. What do you recall of going to your first camp?
I don't recall much of it.
Taken by train, then truck, or?
I went by truck. Just ordinary tents. Big tents.
How many men per tent, roughly?
There'd be 10 or 12, I'd say.
What were your impressions of the camp?
Well, what we expected, I suppose, we got was canvas tents. Three meals a day, and that's about all we worried about.
What did the training involve at your camp?
Mostly PT of the morning, route marches through the day. Went to the rifle range at Jaffa, a place called Jaffa. Just ordinary training. By that time we were close enough to see the British fleet more or less base in Alexandria Harbour. They had some big boats there, the Hood Navy boats. Australian boats were there too, of course.
What was the feeling like to be arriving in a place where you had obvious war preparation?
Well, I always put it down to a miracle happened there as far as I was concerned. I was hanging down around the water one morning down the harbour, and for some unknown reason, most of the battleships and everything else, their names had been obliterated for security reasons, I suppose, and I saw Pinnace, they called them, come ashore with four or five men off, and on the boat was HMAS Hobart. Well, I had a brother and I knew he was on the Hobart, so I was in military uniform and I went up to the Navy bloke and I said, "You the Hobart crowd?" He said, "Yes," and I said, "You might know my brother." is what name I said, oh, Kevin Boyd. Boy, he said, there's about three Boyds on board the boat, and I thought, oh, Jesus, no. So he said, do you want to come out and see him? And I thought, that's funny, that's not any general security. So I said, yes, if I could. He said, yeah, we'll take you out on the boat. He said, we're ready to go out now. And it was out on the end of the harbour protecting the submarine boom out there. So I got on board the boat, no one stopped me. Just walked up the gangway and asked to see, could I see Kevin Boyd? Said, yeah, they sent for him. We had a good talk together. He showed me all over the boat. And I said, oh, I'll get going back to shore now. So when I went to get off the boat, I found out it was much easier to get on. No one would let me off the damn thing, so they wanted to know how I got on board, how long I'd been on board, what I'd seen, who I'd met, and they said, well, you'll have to see the officer of the deck for his permission to get off the boat. By that time there were sailors getting into pinnaces going ashore on leave. So I went up and threw this officer salute, and he gave me permission to come off the boat, but I thought to go travel all that distance across the world to find my brother was a bloody miracle.
The sort of general feeling of being in a foreign land and discussing life with your brother.
No, we more or less just didn't talk about the countries that we've been in or anything. We just talked about experiences. He was on the Hobart when the torpedo hit that. He finished up in the water for about 4 hours in the Mediterranean Sea. Never had any serious wounds or anything like that.
Was he able to give you any sort of hint as to what being under fire was like?
No. They seem to have the upper hand out there, and the only things that used to worry him was the bombing raids at night time on the harbour, with the Jerry bombers coming over to try and get the battleships. But they used to put up such a barrage of guns that it was impossible to pick out targets or anything, I think.
In relation to the general atmosphere and feeling of Alexandria at the time, how would you describe that, do you think?
No, it didn't.
You mentioned obviously the warships in the harbour, and that would have been fairly impressive to see. But what are the general sort of feeling in the place from soldiers and local community, the relationship that there was a war going on?
Well, you didn't see much relationship around there, because Alexandria Harbour, street that ran right along the full length of the harbour was called Sister Street. And Sister Street was the biggest brothel in the Middle East. Actually, with bombing raids and things like that, it was reported of Tony Room, as far as I'd know, but there was supposed to have been anything up to over 800 girls had been killed in bloody bombing raids in Sister Street. You could get a woman there, black, brown, or brindle, any shape you like. The general conversation was still just waiting to get into action, kind of thing, when we were going to see action.
People talk of the warnings that were given, either on board ship or in the camps, about health and hygiene in relation to being in a foreign land, and also in relation to visiting places like Sister Street. Was that something that you recall?
Oh, yes, yours. We had lessons, talks by doctors, captains, medical profession, and they just tell you that French letters wouldn't cost you anything, millions of them, box loads, cart loads of them there, and always put three or four of them in your pocket when you went on leave. I remember our doctor telling us how to put one on properly, and then he said, when you've got the one on, you should put another one on top of that. It was very rife disease there, Middle East.
Were places like Sister Street a generally popular
meeting places? Yeah, but the conversation was just about ordinary conversations.
So what would have been the atmosphere like in some of those places in relation to Sister Street? I mean, presumably bars and things that go along with that. What was the general atmosphere in those places like?
So trying to beat them down in price would be the main topic. Get something for nothing. The sailors used to meet at night time, mingle with us, and we'd mingle with them. They wouldn't talk much about what they were doing either. We never used to talk much what we were doing.
Policing young blokes in places like Sister Street, was there a lot of that that went on?
What?
In places like Sister Street, young blokes going out for a drink and to meet up with ladies. Was there a lot of policing that went along with that?
Yes, the military police were very prominent all the time, but the thing that surprised me was that knowing so many men that were in our platoon that were married men, were going to Sister Street more or less more than what the single men were. We thought that's funny. I expected it to be the other way around, that single men would be there, stuck in Sister Street most of the time, instead of that with married men. But, we knew that they were married because they told us they were married when we left Australia.
How did the ladies in at Sister Street see the average soldier, do you think?
I don't think they were interested in whether he was American, British, Australian, or anything. They were just there to earn money, I think, as much as they could.
Do you think that any of those nationalities had a better reputation or worse reputation in places like Sister Street than others?
No, I think they were just treated more or less people the same, that they were just British troops kind of thing.
People talk of fights developing in some of those areas. Do you recall anything like that?
No.
The general sort of camaraderie between the different forces and also different nationalities, do you think, at that time?
The Poms, well, we called them Poms, we got on pretty well with them, but there was never that much trouble between them.
How are they, do you think, coping with the war? Because obviously their homeland was much closer to action than Australia at that time.
Yes, I see your point there, but didn't seem to worry them whether they were getting their mail more often than us or not. They never seemed to be over worried.
How did they see the Australians, do you think? I understand that they were concerned that you got paid more.
Well, they used to think that we got paid more, but at $5 a day, I think no one would believe. Even the Germans seemed to know after we'd been captured, they told us then that it astounded them to think that the Australian soldier had thrown up a good job where he was getting good wages in Australia to join the army at $5 a day. They reckon that we were mercenaries, we were on much better money than that. They wouldn't believe that it was only 5 shillings a day that we were getting. Couldn't understand why we'd throw up a good job and come away to fight.
What were you feeling about your situation at this point in relation to the adventure?
Well, I was still waiting to see some action of some sort.
How are you finding places like Alexandria as a place to wait for that action?
I enjoy us to go on leave, different parts, and see what I could. Didn't seem to worry me living there, but I got used to the place pretty quickly.